Meditation.
Depending on the quality of my mind.
You know, there's good days and bad days.
Feel like the waterfall of thoughts. Every now and then, a nice calm.
I can't think of anything.
This is Meditation in the City.
The Shambhala, New York podcast.
And I am Dave, your host, and this is episode 110 of the podcast. 110. I didn't do my vocal exercises today. I didn't want to disturb my neighbors. The thing about living in New York City, the thing about living in an urban environment, you're surrounded by people, yet often you experience a sense of isolation. So what does it mean to experience loneliness in a big city? What does it mean to be alone and to just feel alone? Aloneness versus loneliness. That is the topic of today's podcast with Natalie Baker. She is not only a meditation teacher and Shambhala Buddhist teacher. She is also a licensed psychotherapist practicing in New York. I'm sure she has a lot of experience talking to New Yorkers about loneliness. But before we get to that, I do want to mention that the Shambhala Training Level 1, which is our introductory weekend, Shambhala Training Weekend 1, is happening this weekend, September 16th. If you have been listening for a while, if you've been contemplating stepping a little bit deeper into the meditation pool, this is a great opportunity. Shambhala Training Weekend 1 is happening the weekend of September 16th through 18th. And also, one of our introductory weeknight courses, which is called Contentment in Everyday Life, is happening September 22nd and 5 weeknights following. Thursday night, September 22nd, and the 4 Thursdays following. That's just part of our offerings for the fall. Check us out at ny.shambhala.org for information about those courses, events, happenings, as well as other happenings. And, you know, maybe you'll meet some other people and you'll experience aloneness together. And what does that even mean? Well, to talk about the topic of aloneness versus loneliness, here is Natalie Baker.
So the Shambhala Center brings to us the Shambhala teachings, which are Buddhist teachings for this place and this time. And I'm starting with that because the topic of aloneness and loneliness is a very contemporary topic, right? We talk to our friends about it. We talk to our therapists about it. And it's also a topic of Dharma. And when Trungpa Rinpoche, who started the Shambhala Centers, when he came to the West, he introduced the Shambhala teachings specifically as what would be helpful for us in this day and age as people who have jobs and relationships, and also people who orient psychologically, right? So we are very interested, particularly as New Yorkers, in how our minds work, why we feel what we do, why we do what we do. And so also the Shambhala teachings are oriented in such a way that we can infuse our natural orientation, which is to look at the world and understand ourselves through our psychology, with treading on the spiritual path. So whereas maybe more so in Tibet, the student comes to the teacher and says, you know, bless me, bonk me on the head, give me special, you know, water. The Western student comes to the teacher and says, why am I so lonely? Can you fix that for me? So we orient towards our psychological well-being as a sign and a path towards our spiritual development. So we're going to talk tonight about the experience of loneliness and the reality of being alone. So this is kind of an interesting topic, aloneness. Because on the one hand, nobody would say that they came into the world as a merged being, as part of somebody else. Right? We all know that pretty soon after birth, the umbilical cord gets cut, and there we are, separate beings. We're alone. And yet, the way that we think about our experience is we try to avoid the truth of the fact that we're alone. Why do we do that? So I'm hoping that you'll contemplate that a little bit tonight. But we don't associate the fact that we're alone in the world as a good thing. And so hopefully you're like going, yeah, do I think of it as a good thing, being alone? Is that? Maybe if we're an introvert, right, we're like, yes. But certainly when we talk about our experience and we notice the subtle value judgment that we place on what we do, there is an implicit value around connectedness, being liked. I've noticed that millennials do this thing, they have this torture birthday practice where they decide on a bar and then they invite all their friends to show up to celebrate their birthday. And then they start to fixate on how many people are going to show up. And why did that person say that they're not coming? And will enough people come? And it becomes this way of finding out, you know, how valuable am I? By how many friends show up at the bar to celebrate. And it points at this judgment that we have around being alone. We will value someone as a separate individual if they do something great, right? Like the President of the United States, he or she alone, right, is the most powerful person in the world, right? Then we're like, yeah, that person. Or somebody writes a bestseller. Or get some sort of acknowledgement, prize. In those moments, we'll definitely value that person as separate. But when we think about ourselves, just as like separate people, right? Like I can't read your mind, you can't read my mind. We have to use language to communicate and negotiate. We have to feed ourselves and clothe ourselves. But somehow we don't think of that as a wholesome thing or as something about our humanity that we could appreciate. Instead, we think about other people being there for us. And we see this in particular in our intimate relationships, where we overemphasize the connectedness aspects of being in a relationship and dismiss and underemphasize our separateness as two individuals. And so we fixate and focus on things like, are we communicating well? Are we really connecting? Are we on the same wavelength? And we don't seem to cherish as much the aspects of an intimate relationship that reflect the fact that we are fundamentally separate, and no matter how much we love each other, right, we're not going to die at the same time. We're not always going to hold the same opinion. And then we go, let's merge. Our aloneness as individuals is like an elephant in the room. And then if we think about the feeling of loneliness, which is kind of like the perfume of the rose being the fact that we are alone. And so naturally, we're going to have the feeling of loneliness. But then maybe a better metaphor would be garbage and the stench of garbage. Because I don't think many of us appreciate feeling lonely. Right? As soon as we notice that we feel lonely, the next thing is there's a problem. There's a problem. It's a problem with me. It's a problem that all those people didn't show up at my birthday party. Right? We feel lonely. We immediately assume there is a problem. There's something wrong with me, or there's something wrong with them, right? When we are in an intimate relationship and we're feeling very vividly our separateness, we usually label that a problem with the relationship. It's time to go to therapy. How often do we actually feel lonely? So think about the last 2 hours. And think about when were the moments in the last few hours that I experienced feeling lonely. It might have been just that flash moment being on the subway, right? And you notice that it's the try to avert your eyes and not look at anybody. Or it might be looking at your phone and seeing that nobody's texted, nobody called. See if you can find at least two moments in your experience. And then the second part of that is, what did you do next? Even if you didn't really register that there was a lonely feeling there, just get curious about how you react to your own loneliness. What do you do with it? So another thing we like to do is we like to think that this is my issue alone and that other people don't have this issue. So what I want you to do right now is I want you just to turn to anybody around you. And just for 3 minutes, I want you guys to talk about what do you notice about how you relate with your loneliness. So what did you learn about when you're lonely, when your neighbor is lonely, what you do with that feeling? What did you discover?
I expected us to have, you know, something in common. Obviously, that was the point of the conversation, was for us to say that we've had the experience of loneliness and that it was uncomfortable. But I'm really surprised, particularly talking between the two of us, that we responded to it the same way and that we're both very curious about it. And it was a little, it's almost weird. It's weird how much we have in common and exactly the way we responded to it and how we felt about it. That surprised me.
Great. What else did people notice?
I was thinking for me, the physical isolation is a lot more harder than, or a lot more harder. It's harder to be physically isolated, but seems like I have more control of how to go about it. Whereas being lonely, you know, being with another person, like the example you gave, you know, one cut you off or not in sync with someone, and that seems really hard to sort of look at it and explore that.
That's when it's hard to look at it?
Yeah, and or how to, well, in the Buddhist context, I'm not trying to solve it, but, you know, of course, but, you know, like how, you know, I mean, yes, I would like to be with everybody, wherever I am, in sync all the time. And when that happens, it's so great, you know. But of course, I'm quite disappointed in everyday life. And so so that seems like harder to be like, you know, alone and together, yes, or whatever this suggests, you know.
Right. Yeah. Disappointed. That's a good one. Yeah, there's often an assumption that somehow, if we feel lonely, that somehow we're failing. Who makes that assumption? If I'm feeling lonely, somehow I must be failing at something here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we really we give it to ourselves when we feel lonely sometimes. Do you want to add something?
Definitely, like, I feel that when I'm lonely, I get bad at myself because I feel like I have a lack of sense of self. And I feel like I should be able to be okay with being alone because, like, I'm like my own person and I should be able to derive my own worth from just being a person and not, like, having to have other people validate, like, my own greatness. So I get mad at myself that I fail to recognize that, even though I intellectualize it.
Yes, yeah. That's, thank you. That's very true, I think, for a lot of us. What else did you notice?
Well, both my partner and I, we noticed that we like to deflect it by, you know, either turning something on the television or maybe falling asleep or, you know, texting somebody to feel the love. Mm-hmm. But for me, I think that there's a very fundamental and sincere desire to have connection. Mm-hmm. And when I don't have that, I feel very sad.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, that's good you brought that up. Is there more you want to say?
Yeah.
Okay. So there is a fundamental desire we have for connectedness. And that is a separate topic.
Sorry.
Don't bring it up in here, okay? Don't confuse these people. So what do we do with the fact that we are alone? We naturally, therefore, feel lonely. And we do genuinely want to connect with other people and share experiences. And sometimes that doesn't happen. And sometimes that doesn't happen for what seems like our entire lifetime. So that is super, 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 super painful, right? This is usually the moment that we then do that funky thing that the gentleman in the back talked about, which is we attack this person, right? There's something wrong with me then. So, we're going to talk a little bit about the Shambhala view of aloneness and working with our loneliness. I'm going to start with a quote. It's always good to know what the teachings actually say. This was a talk, actually, that Trungpa Rinpoche gave to psychotherapists back in the mid-70s, titled, Is Meditation Therapy? And it's from the book, The Sanity We Are Born With. Meditation experience is a personal experience. Extremely personal experience, real experience. You begin to feel alone because you are what you are. You don't feel alone in the sense that you feel that you need somebody else's support. Rather, you can do it yourself. Being alone and being lonely is not a big problem anymore. You begin to feel delight in being alone, as a matter of fact. Aloneness is part of not needing support or testimony. So the path of meditation is how we discover our fundamental aloneness, which is different. I'll just say this very clearly. This is a very different experience than not being loved. By others, which is essential to grow up. Another separate topic. Yeah. So the path of meditation is the path of discovering our workability as humans. And as we talked about, being alone in the world is kind of fundamental to being a human being. And we pervert that and say, ooh, there's something bad about that. Something bad about that lonely feeling. That's our confusion from the Buddhist point of view. Our doubt that arises when we experience our loneliness, that's what's called samsara, suffering, endless cycle of suffering. Because our state of being alone in the world is how we experience our fundamental sanity. And actually, it's through our glimpses of being alone and through the feeling that we often have of being lonely. It's kind of a feeling that's there throughout the day. But from a practice point of view, that's actually part of how we connect with the world. So now our natural state, which is that we're alone, right? You're looking at me, I'm looking at you, right? We're separate, right? That actually becomes the basis through which we can then engage in communication. So from the Shambhala point of view, it is through acknowledging and being in our separateness, our sense of aloneness, that we can actually then have a conversation. And the conversation becomes much more workable when we start with the foundation of the fact that it's perfectly fine. It's very workable that we're alone, we're born alone, we have to feed and clothe ourselves alone, and that we die alone. That from the Shambhala point of view, that is now part of our good inheritance as humans. And that the feeling of loneliness, which we habitually label as proof that we're a problem or we're lacking, we fucked up in some way, that's why I'm alone, that now that we actually change that, we interpret the experience of loneliness as a sign of our ability to connect with others. Not something that we have to change. Make note of that. When you notice that you feel lonely, your next thought could be, oh, I don't have to change that. That's actually not a problem. We just let it be here. It's part of my experience. And I'll bet you, like, 80% of the people around me are probably having a very similar experience if they tune in. So now, there's this great equalizer. Right? We're all alone people together. So the path of meditation and why it's very helpful to do more extended sitting is because the time at which we usually get up from the meditation cushion is the time that we're starting to feel something, uncomfortable. Because most of us, right, we're trained very habitually to avoid feeling lonely, because it'll cue you into something bad, or it might lead to depression. It certainly leads to a pretty compelling story that we tell ourselves. So that's often the moment that we're ready to get up off the cushion, is when we start to actually kind of sink in and notice ourselves. So when we do an extended sitting period, whether it's a couple hours, like, you know, the Nintun on Sunday, which is Sunday morning sit, right, where it's longer, or you do a day of the Weektun or a couple days, you actually stay present to that lonely feeling that arises. And instead of having the habitual kind of story about the problem, you have a new experience of it because you're bringing it into your meditation practice. And then you also have glimpses of what Trungpa Rinpoche calls aloneness. And aloneness, for those of you who are interested in more technical Buddhist terms, we could call that egolessness. Usually people think of egolessness as losing our personalities or not being arrogant. But actually, egolessness is the experience of resting non-conceptually. The experience of what? What? Of resting non-conceptually. There's no agenda. There's no mental agenda. And when we practice for longer periods of time, the habit of like churning out a lot of thinking and entertaining ourselves through thought, right? And through like, oh, what should I do about that? What am I going to do this weekend? Who do I need to call back? Oh, yeah, what should... That whole thing, it just starts to lose its momentum. Because when we practice labeling that thinking and focusing our attention on the breath as the object of mindfulness, we're no longer fueling that conceptual mental chatter. And so when we're not fueling that, there arises more opportunity to experience our immediate selves without tinkering, without concept. And so in those moments, we can have a flash or a sense of our aloneness, and our aloneness as workable. And of course, I'm using language to describe it because I can't do this part, give you the mind-to-mind transmission. So we use words to describe things that are beyond language. It's usually in hindsight that we noticed, oh, I was just here. There's this sense of just being. The experience of egolessness is more about residing, a sense of resting, so when we hold the Shambhala view, which is different than our ordinary view, right? So we don't in our culture and our psychology, we don't value space. Space is something to be filled. But from a practice point of view, space is the whole point. The clouds move across the sky, and we focus on the clouds as sort of ordinary people. That's what we focus on, is the clouds moving across, and we'll describe them. Those are the thoughts. But from a practice point of view, and from the point of view of connecting with the experience of aloneness, we're actually interested in the experience of the sky. The sky that doesn't have anything in it. So in order to really understand this experience, we have to practice meditation regularly. And that's not a problem, because from practice point of view, from the Shambhala point of view, what you're going to discover, despite your greatest fears, is you're going to discover that there's something very wholesome and very workable. Even in pain, even in loneliness, even in confusion, in doubt, in self-loathing, rage. What other things can we pull up that we think would confirm us as fundamentally rotten? Right. Jealousy? Yes, jealousy. Resentment, revenge, fantasies. All of that, when you're on the cushion, are just the clouds. Just clouds moving across. Not so interested in those. Not going to freak out. So, when you come to the Shambhala Center, you get to hold a different view. In the same way that when you're at home, you just very naturally, hopefully, feel entitled to relax and feel safe in your home. Hopefully, but that's sort of what we associate with home, is, okay, now's when I get to relax, be comfortable. That when you come to the Shambhala Center, that you could hold the view that, oh, this is the place where I don't have to hide the fact that I'm alone. When I walk in the door, and there's that sort of awkward moment of like, what should I do? Should I go sit with those people? Should I just go to the bathroom? Right? That whole experience could just be fine, just as it is. That you don't have to tinker with or distract yourself from any experience you have loneliness, of your aloneness as you practice in a group. And there's a very, very interesting thing that happens when people practice meditation together, even if they don't ever talk to each other. They have this sense of connectedness. You should be meditating at the Shambhala Center all the time. That's the cure. I was thinking, when I was coming up here in the cab, I was thinking, what if we interpreted every time you see somebody staring at a phone, what if you had the thought, oh, they're experiencing their basic aloneness right now. And just like mentally did like a thumbs up, like, it's okay. It's okay. But we could actually be cheered up by the fact that we're alone and that we do feel lonely, right? That is the view, the switch of interpretation that we can make when we're here at the Shambhala Center and when we're thinking about ourselves as meditators, possibly people on the spiritual path, that we could switch out the words, right? That instead of labeling loneliness as confirmation there is a problem, that instead we could switch it out as like confirmation actually that everything's fine and that I can connect with other people if I want to, but that it's perfectly fine that I'm alone and I feel lonely. Not a problem. And then there's all those, the yeah buts. We could talk about the yeah buts that come up. Any questions or comments?
I was just going to say that I actually take portraits of people.
Can you speak a little bit louder?
Oh, sure.
Thank you.
I can feel the whole room in my voice.
Yay.
I take portraits of people, so it's about connecting, obviously. One of the things that I realized is that people are a mystery even unto themselves, and in some way that actually helped me to take a better portrait, because I realized, I guess, that sense of separateness, but I actually need to spend a lot of time alone to connect with other people to take an effective portrait.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is a challenge, though. I mean, I won't deny that it's not. I mean, my path seems to be that I've had to spend a certain amount of time alone, but it's not always easy. I find it pushes up against certain things, but that doesn't mean that I don't think that it's I think you used the word, something that had to do with essential, when you were describing what Trump Rinpoche said. Aloneness, rather than being a fault, it's something that is part of a basic makeup of what?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes, it's part of our humanness.
Right, and I feel like if I don't have that ingredient, I can't connect with other people.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's very hard to connect unless you're separate.
Yeah.
Right? Otherwise, it's like a soupy, mergy, soupy mess.
And I think that a lot of times the sense of loneliness comes from the sense of need and desire. This sort of, it's not that you just simply want to, I guess one of the things that I realized from being alone is that I'm alone, and that every time that I share being in the presence of somebody else, that's actually a gift, because they only have so many moments in their lives and they're sharing it with me. So, because there's something sometimes about feeling alone, I mean lonely, that sort of feels like ungrateful, because I know I do spend a lot of time alone and actually moved away from here as a sacrifice to what I'm doing in a way. But I know that there are a lot of people that really, really love me. That's undoubtable. They let me know, and I love them. So mm-hmm. I'm not really lonely.
Well, and that's a good point, which is that woman right here would be great. That feeling lonely has absolutely nothing to do with being loved. Separate topic. Right, we merge those topics. They don't belong together. We are going to feel lonely. We are. And sometimes we feel more loved by others. Sometimes we feel less loved by others. Very different. I think, you know, what we could do as a practice, as a mindfulness practice, is that when you notice that you're doing something that communicates to you that you're lonely, to just invite yourself to be aware of that. Oh, in this moment, I'm lonely. Okay. Don't analyze it. Don't try to change it. Just allow it to be there in your experience. Yes.
Hi. I actually have two questions, but right? I can start with one. I'm wondering, what is the Shambhala point of view on the feeling of the feeling lonely when someone is in extreme situations? Like, for instance, parents are dead, you don't have a boyfriend or a girlfriend, you don't have friends.
Right.
So you talked before about being in the subway sometimes during the day, feeling this feeling, but how would you explain the feeling when you actually think you have a problem because of this?
Well, I think the basic point is that when we stop tinkering and we notice what's there, then we can be much more responsive, and we can be more responsive in a way that is gentle and open. So if we notice that we're lonely and that that feeling is very intense and it prevents us from enjoying our lives, then hopefully the next thing would be, okay, well, how do I help this, right? What is going to connect me with other people? So the main emotion, you could say, that arises when we practice, and also the Shambhala teachings encourage us to cultivate, is gentleness. So when somebody is lonely, we're now going to approach it from the point of view of gentleness, not from aggression, not from the speediness of our kind of fix-it minds. So what happens when we practice is that we soften. We open up. It's just a natural thing that we do, actually, is that we're actually very caring as animals, as humans. And so then for that person who notices, oh, but this loneliness doesn't just feel like the kind of basic loneliness that they're talking about. This feels like the kind of loneliness that seriously needs a hug. Right, and maybe like many hugs. Okay, how can I get some hugs for this person? Right, and then we try to care for them, or we get help caring for this person.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And also, I'm curious, if I may ask one more question.
Mm-hmm.
You said before that you guessed that we all felt lonely in the past few hours or in the day. That happens sometimes. It's actually normal, it's common, and other people experience that too. So when did we start? Maybe you can give me some suggestion of books or some reference if you prefer, but when did we start thinking that that was a problem or something that you were afraid of?
Right. Yeah, that's a very good question, right? When did we first start interpreting loneliness as a problem? What was that? What did he say?
Feudalism and capitalism.
Feudalism and capitalism. We've been doing it for a while, right? Yeah, we can talk about karma and lifetimes of karmic accumulation, or we can look very specifically at our own lives and notice, when did I first start interpreting loneliness as a real problem. You know, and if we just look at child development, right, there's definitely that period when peers become very important. And that's very interesting. There is like a time when kids are little and playing alone versus playing with others, not really, we don't make a big deal out of that. And then something happens. And then all of a sudden, right, being lonely feels really bad. So that's kind of a curious thing, that we kind of come by it honestly in some way.
Thank you. I do have two questions as well, actually, or I don't know.
One maybe of them, let's do one, and then you can ask me the second one after the talk.
Okay. So I'll go with the first one that I have then, which actually I'm not sure is still on topic, but it just came up
for
me.
Go for it.
Disassociation.
Disassociation?
If you think about it, even a trauma response or an extreme depression, right? So just it's a distinction, of course, because you're not
embodied.
You're not present, but I think it has a loneliness quality, as in that fundamental disconnect. You know, it is... I think also non-conceptual in a way. I don't know. I guess I want to hear your view on it.
On disassociation?
And in relation to loneliness and Shambhala and...
Well, I think from... I'll put on my therapist hat first to answer the question because it's a technical term. So dissociation or dissociative state, right? That is a very skillful way to avoid a lot of pain in the present moment. So like thumbs up for any little munchkins that dissociate when there's like a really bad thing happening, because that's their body's actually manifesting fundamental intelligence. So that's awesome. Unfortunately, it becomes a habitual pattern. And then we start to not be aware, not be present in our felt experience in our bodies. And things cue us to that. And people who are traumatized can become habituated to being in a dissociated state where they really don't feel like they're in their bodies. They often can't remember episodes. That's very different, very, very, very different than feeling lonely. Now, someone who is traumatized does feel very lonely, but they feel very lonely for a very good reason. So we also want to appreciate that loneliness can also communicate a great deal of intelligence. Because children, right, so from a developmental point of view, children grow up being having the experience of being seen and loved and hugged and acknowledged and having eye contact. And that's just something that everybody needs to grow up healthy. But that doesn't mean that we're not going to feel lonely in the way that we're talking about the loneliness tonight, because the loneliness that we're talking about tonight stems from the fact that we are separate, fundamentally separate from each other. We don't share a mind, right? So from that experience of aloneness, we could feel lonely. And that's just also part of our basic humanness, which is different, right, than a child who's traumatized and feels a tremendous amount of pain and loneliness from not being protected and cared for. Different topics. Thank you all for coming. And please do your meditation practice. Please, please, please. That's very important. And I think there's refreshments outside if you care to stay and chat some more.
Thank you, Natalie Baker, for a great talk. I feel a little less lonely today, perhaps a little more alone, and it's okay. Hey, visit us at ny.shambhala.org For more information about classes and weekend retreats, if you happen to live in a different city, there's probably a Shambhala Meditation Center near you. Look us up. Visit us in person if you happen to be in the New York City area. You can see these talks live in the flesh every Tuesday night. They are our weekly Dharma gathering every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock, where you can meet these teachers in person along with all the other people who like this stuff and enjoy meditation and hearing about these teachings. Thanks for listening. Later.